friend. You've got to come back and try this stuff on. Elle turns around and glances back at me. I nod her on despite myself. She claps her hands together. Okay, but I have to be quick. She turns back again. I promise this will be fast. I bet none of it'll fit me anyway. I smile with my lips closed. Following her to the back, I stop, frozen in place by the rays of Morgan's brow. Sorry, she says, her lips twitching into a smile. The kind of smile that says you're not really sorry. Employees only. You okay out here? Asks Elle, her eyes catching mine. Yeah, just hurry. She skips to the back behind Morgan as Callie stations herself behind the counter, swaying her hips to the beat of the poppy music playing on the speakers as she pretends to read some kind of sales report. Squeezing between the racks, I think about how miserable this place must be on a Saturday. Callie turns the music up when the song changes to a hyper-techno beat, and I take that as my cue to sneak into one of the fitting rooms. Each stall is made of a wall of curtains and consists of one little stool. The only mirror is the communal mirror outside. That's got to be a pain in the ass, to have to leave your room every time you want to see how something looks on you. On the other side of the curtain, hangers scrape against metal. Where'd Elle's friend go? Asks Morgan. I don't know, says Callie. I didn't see her leave, but she'd be pretty hard to miss. Aw, be nice, says Morgan. And it seems like it should be a kind thing to say, but her voice is laughing. Did Elle Bell find anything? She's trying on some dresses in the break room. More hangers against metal scratching. It's really sweet of Elle to hang out with that girl, but all she does is follow Elle around like a puppy dog. I mean, get your own life, right? It's sad. That's all it takes for my whole body to tense with anger. I yank the curtain aside and trip over the fabric as I do. Their four eyes follow me to the bench outside of Sweet 16, where I slouch down as low as I can so that I can't see the two of them anymore. If I could unzip my skin and step outside of myself, I would. All the display windows in the mall are packed with formals for homecoming and pageant season. Across from Sweet 16 is a store called Frills, with a glittering baby blue gown on display. Written across the window, in shoe polish, it says, Clover City can only have one Miss Teen blue bonnet. Make it you. Check out our one-of-a-kind dresses. I hate how much I despise the pageant, but it feels like a disease, and the whole town is sick.
Hey.
I twist around to find Beau sitting down on the back side of the bench. What are you doing here? I ask, like an accusation.
Shopping with my stepmom and brother.
He points to the shoe store next to Sweet 16.
I saw you sit down on the bench. My little brother's been trying on basketball shoes for 45 minutes.
He smiles and dips his chin down into his chest.
What are you doing here, Willow Dean?
I want to touch him. I want to reach over and kiss his face hello. But I don't, because we're not pressed into darkness behind harpies or huddled together in the cab of his truck. And because, even though neither of us has ever said so, we are a secret. Here with my friend. She's picking up her paycheck.
Ellen?
I nod. I've talked about Elle with Beau, but in a past tense kind of way. Well, I don't know how to explain the strange gap that has formed between us. So it was easier to talk about her in the same way I talked about Lucy. Like she was a thing from a life before him. I notice that he's wearing an old basketball tournament t-shirt and a pair of basketball shorts. It's weird seeing you without your uniform on. I almost didn't recognize you.
Oh, I recognized you.
He stretches his legs out along his side of the bench. And his legs. I've never seen his bare legs.
So where does your friend work?
I point back to Sweet 16. His mouth opens, and I know that I will forever judge him based on how he reacts to this information. But a voice interrupts him. Beau! Calls a tall, thin woman with shiny chestnut brown hair cut into long layers. She's too young to be his mom, and too old to be his sister. Beau glances over his shoulder and then back at me.
My stepmom.
he whispers. My face falls slack. I've been dreading the moment when our worlds collide. Behind Beau's stepmom is his brother. He's as tall as Beau, but his round cheeks tell me he's at least a year younger.
I let the time slip on by, didn't I? She says. Sammy's got basketball at 1. Time to hop to it.
Her eyes travel to me, sitting there on the other side of the bench.
And who is this?
Ma'am. I stand and hold my hand out to her because I'm Southern, and even if my mom says otherwise, I do have manners.
This is Willow Dean, says Beau.
There he goes, saying my full name again.
We work together.
Willow Dean! Well, isn't that a mouthful?
I half smile, about to say thank you. For what, I have no idea, when Ellen appears next to me and says,
But you can call her Will.
I swallow and nod. Beau's stepmom's head anchors to one side, like she's just seen the most adorable thing.
And you are?
This is Ellen, I answer for her. My best friend. I take a deep breath. Ellen, this is Beau. We work together. Beau gives Ellen a short wave, but she touches his arm and says,
So nice to meet you.
His stepmom smiles.
Aren't you precious?
I know that Ellen loves Tim, and yet jealousy creeps up my spine, paralyzing me. Over the course of the summer, I have given myself plenty of reasons why I shouldn't tell Ellen about what's been going on with Beau. But no matter how I spin it, I know that, to Ellen, my not telling her is as good as any lie. Actually, this might be worse.
I guess y'all must go to Clover City High.
We nod in unison.
How wonderful that Beau will have some familiar faces on his first day.
Excuse me? I blurt. There are many things wrong with the relationship between Beau and me, but the one thing that's right is that, outside of work, our worlds do not intersect. And for as long as that's the case, it's easy to pretend that I'm a normal girl, making out with a normal boy.
Yeah, Beau and Sammy won't be back at Holy Cross this year.
She frowns a little.
It'll be good. Change is good. Right, boys?
Neither respond. Beau's lips press together in a thin line, and I know that he knew this whole summer and didn't tell me.
Lorraine,
he says to his stepmom.
We better get going. Sam's got practice.
He scoops up their bags, and his stepmom leads the way, her hips swaying from side to side. And that's it. Not even a gaze or a shrug. Nothing that might promise me an explanation. Anger boils all the way up from my toes to my cheeks.
Seriously,
screeches Elle.
He is even hotter than you let on.
Let's go.
I storm ahead of her toward the parking garage.
Did you notice that, like, sexy bedhead thing he had going on? And that stubble?
I noticed. Of course I noticed. But it doesn't matter. Because this is going to have to end. My illusions of our after-school romance are dissolving like vapor. I had a vision in my head of how I would survive the school year. We would both come to work and leave our real lives at the door. There would be no questions, only us. But there is a reason why Beau didn't tell me he was changing schools. Well, there has to be. And even if there's not, he and I have to be done because I can't let this bleed over into real life.
I won't be ridiculed. I won't be one half of the couple who everyone stares at and asks, how did she get him?
Chapter 15. All summer I have spent every free evening at home, holed up in my room with my laptop and my summer reading looming on my shelves. But tonight, my mother is dead set on me watching television with her while she crafts props for the pageant's opening dance number. I sit on the couch, opposite where Lucy always sat, with my laptop nestled on top of a pillow. My mom has moved her crown, which sits in a glass case, from the center of the mantel to make room for Lucy's urn. It's a small thing, but it's enough to remind me that my mom is more than the pageant. She uses wax paper to iron some kind of patches onto denim tablecloths, for the pageant luncheon, I'm sure.
Now, I saw a commercial for this special the other day.
She flips through channels until she lands on MTV. The camera follows a girl from behind,
walking down the street of a snow-covered neighborhood. She's wide, and her stomach hangs over her jeans. I immediately know where this is going. I hate seeing fat girls on TV or in movies, because the only way the world seems to be okay with putting a fat person on camera is if they're miserable with themselves, or if they're the jolly best friend. Well, I'm neither of those things. A voiceover kicks in atop footage of the girl doing perfectly normal human things, like walking and eating.
16-year-old Priscilla of Bridgeport, Connecticut may have a sweet tooth, but that doesn't mean that 16 has been so sweet. Teased and ridiculed her entire life, Priscilla is done carrying the extra weight. She doesn't know it yet, but we here at MTV have heard her plea. The camera zooms in on her ass, which is the kind of butt that tapers down at the bottom and always makes you look like you have a wedgie. Then the camera cuts away to a purple screen with the title of the show stamped across it like a rejection stamp. Transform me. I hate my fat body. I glance over at my mom, but she trains her eyes down on her project. I want to get up and lock myself in my room. But I sort of want to know pathetic Priscilla's fate, so I decide to stick around. Maybe Priscilla's life is an even bigger mess than mine, and I'll walk away feeling like I've at least got it better than this poor girl. This isn't new territory for my mom and me. She had me on more fad diets than I can list before I even turned 11. It was always a sore point between her and Lucy. I'd hear the two of them downstairs, arguing back and forth about it long after I should have been asleep. "She's a child," Lucy would say. "I want her to be healthy," my mom would retort. "Surely you understand where I'm coming from, Luce. I just don't want her to grow up to be like me." "Just say it, Rosie. You don't want her to grow up to be like your big sister. She sees me every day, for Christ's sake. I think my existence is deterrent enough. You know what it was like for us when we were kids. You remember?" My mom never talked about her life before high school. She was big, like me. And it wasn't something she was proud of. But the summer before ninth grade, Mom shed her baby fat like dead skin. Lucy was in 11th grade by then, and she hadn't been so lucky. The dieting eventually stopped when I hit middle school. I don't know exactly what it was, but it could have only been Lucy. On the TV, Priscilla is ambushed at school by a tiny yet aggressive woman who turns out to be her personal trainer. Despite signing up for the show herself, Priscilla goes into freakout mode, locking herself in a bathroom stall and crying herself silly. Eventually, the trainer comes in and shows her soft side while giving the ultimate pep talk. I mean, seriously, it even got me feeling a little fired up. But over what, I have no idea. I don't have to look at my mom to know that her eyes are watering. The "this is your life, stop standing in the way of your thinnest self" moment is my mom's favorite part of any weight loss show. I zone out for most of the hour, but I can't look away when during a morning workout at the school track, Priscilla's trainer pushes her so hard that she throws up all over the bleachers, just in time for the entire boys' soccer team to bear witness. After that, Priscilla's trainer moves things to a local gym. But the girl refuses to go inside. The trainer loses it, calling her all kinds of names. "I feel so alone," Priscilla says between sobs. "Have you ever walked into a building that is so dedicated to being everything you're not? I want to be healthy, but I also want to be happy." In the end, Priscilla loses 12 pounds. Her trainer claps for her at her final weigh-in, but you can see the disappointment in her eyes. The credits roll, and as they do, the captions tell us that 6 months later, Priscilla is still committed to a healthy lifestyle, but has come to terms with the fact that her weight will be a lifelong struggle for her. If Elle were here, we'd talk about how ridiculous it was that this was even considered entertainment. "Well," says Mom, "that was inspiring." I have nothing to say that she would want to hear. "I'm going upstairs. Are you done down here?" She takes the remote and switches over to the evening news. "No, no. I've got piles of things to do before tomorrow's pageant board meeting. I'm going to bed. Night, Templin." Upstairs, I stand in front of Lucy's door for a moment too long before going to my bedroom.
I unplug my phone from the charger and find that I have zero messages from Beau. Flopping down on my bed, I hold the magic eight ball he gave me in both hands. I have too many questions to ask only one, but I shake the ball three times and check for an answer. Outlook, not so good. My phone buzzes. Ellen,
just got off work. You okay? You were weird after the mall.
I settle for a lie because I've already told too many to stop now.
Me, I'm fine, just the pageant taking over my house. Boobs up, ass out.
So annoying.
Ellen, gross. Want me to come over?
Me, I think I want to sleep.
Ellen, cool. Tim bought massage oils. Is that trashy?
I think about this for a second.
Me,
not unless they smell like cotton candy.
Y'all are disgusting. Night.
Chapter 16.
Yesterday's pulsing anger is now just a sad frustration. I have no reason to think Beau owes me anything. Kisses behind a dumpster and in the parking lot of a condemned school don't amount to anything. If that's all that we are, those shadow moments and a bag of gag gifts, then how foolish of me to think I deserved anything of him. This is the conversation I have with myself on my drive to work. I drop my stuff in my locker and weave through the kitchen as fast as I can. I take orders as quickly and efficiently as possible, not even bothering to glance up the customers. Beau stares holes into my forehead as he sets sandwiches beneath the heat lamps or covers sandwich wrappers in the necessary stickers, something that always wins a smile for me. But I stay diligent, with my eyes narrowed on anything but him. I can feel the change between us. Thick and palpable, but Marcus and Ron treat us no differently. Because, to them, nothing visible is out of place. My little summer world is caving in on me, and I am the only witness. This is what happens, I think, when a secret turns into a lie. After the dinner rush, the entire kitchen is a mess. Like there was some kind of take-no-prisoners food fights. When Ron asks for a volunteer to restock the condiment bar, I gladly offer. I wait for the door of the supply room to shut behind me, but when it doesn't, I know why.
Hey,
says Beau. I don't turn around. Pulling from different shelves, I begin to assemble a stack of supplies to take out front.
Hey, listen,
he says.
I was going to tell you.
I hear him take a few steps and his breath is on my neck. He covers my hand with his, and his skin is dry from the plastic gloves he wears in the kitchen. But still, he absorbs me.
It never came up.
He nuzzles the nape of my neck. His nose presses through the wisps of hair fallen from my ponytail.
Don't be mad.
I can't talk about this right now. I don't even know how to talk to him, not without our lips pressed together. He kisses my neck, the soft patch of skin south of my ear. Please, please stop. I yank my hand free and press the boxes of napkins, utensils, and condiments close to my chest and brush past him.
Willow Dean.
I want to take back my name. I want to erase that moment when we first kissed, and he took it and made it his.
Come on,
he says, a little too quietly, like he's resigned himself to losing a fight that hasn't even begun. At the end of the night, I start refilling the salt and pepper shakers. The bell above the door dings, so I let Marcus take it.
Hey!
He calls.
Beau, your boy is here!
I peer around the corner to see Colin, the same guy who visited Beau at the beginning of the summer.
What do you want, man?
Asks Beau. He looks exhausted, with dark circles weighing under his eyes. Colin grins.
Checking in on my old buddy. It won't be the same at Holy Cross without you. You'll survive,
says Beau.
Speaking of, Amber says hi. She's doing a lot better. Some distance did her good.
Colin shrugs.
A few distractions didn't hurt. Good for her,
Beau says through his teeth.
You should come by the courts one night. Hang out on the sidelines or something.
Something tickles my hand. I look down to see I've poured salt all over the table.
Shit.
Both of them turn to me. Colin smiles.
Ah, I remember you. What was your name again?
I open my mouth to answer, but...
Will. Her name's Will,
says Bo. It cuts so deep to hear him call me anything but Willow Dean. I leave the salt and pepper there on the counter and head back through the kitchen to grab the trash. Footsteps follow me.
Please talk to me,
Bo says. I push through the back door without answering him. Reaching up for the tall dumpster, I try flipping the lid 1, 2, 3 times. He reaches over me and opens the thing on one try.
We need to talk.
He takes the bags from my clenched fists and vaults them over the top. I drag my sweating palms down my thighs.
About what? How about that girl, huh? What was I, your summer rebound?
He takes a step toward me, and I nearly take a step back to restore the balance. But I'm not willing to show any ounce of weakness.
You weren't a rebound, okay? That's not what this was. It is. What this is.
His voice drops an octave.
But it's not like our relationship is based on communication.
You could have at least told me you weren't going back to Holy Cross. He's quiet for a minute, and I take his silence as a concession.
Why wouldn't you tell me that, Bo?
What?
Were you hoping I wouldn't notice?
No, it's just...
It doesn't matter, I sigh. What are we even arguing over? We make out behind the dumpster and in an old parking lot. That doesn't really seem like anything worth arguing for.
And then there's the way everything in me turns to shit every time he puts his hands on me. Like, I'm not good enough. Not pretty enough. Not thin enough.
I used to think you were misunderstood. That people didn't get you.
But I was wrong.
You're a real jerk, Bo Larson.
I take a step back now, loosening the line between us that's held us taut all summer. I wish I could tell Ellen about this.
And I'm done being your secret.
Chapter 17.
I barely even glance at my schedule before the first day of school. I wait outside of second period for Elle. It's the only class we have in common this semester. The second bell rings, and I'm about to go inside without her when I see her sprinting down the hallway toward me with Tim at her heels.
So sorry,
she breathes. Tim squeezes her hand as he runs past her and on to his next class.
What were you even doing?
Her eyebrows pop up and down as she shrugs. I shake my head and follow her inside. There are only 2 desks left. One behind Callie, Elle's co-worker, who is waving her to come over. And the other is at the long table at the back of the room next to Mitch Lewis. Elle turns to me and whispers,
I'm sorry, Will. We'll get here early next class, I promise.
I shuffle to the back of the room to sit next to Mitch. As I sit down, Mitch pulls his backpack in, so that I've got more space at my end of the table. Mitch is big. He's got a bit of a belly and shoulders wider than most door frames. But people don't look at him and think fat. They think athletic. Which makes sense, seeing as he's a defensive tackle for the CCHS Rams.
Hey,
he whispers. His accent is the type of southern accent you hear Hollywood actors use. It's almost charming.
Will, right?
With my eyes on Mr. Crispin, I nod, like I can't bear to be torn away from his riveting roll call.
Well, I'd be willing to bet we haven't shared a classroom since the 6th grade.
Mrs. Salisbury, I smile, surprised that he even remembers. She was the best teacher I've ever had. I remember Mitch because he would ask the silliest questions like,
Why can't we see air?
And while everyone would snigger under their breath, she would answer his question. And her answer would be so smart that you'd start to realize maybe his question wasn't so dumb in the first place. Mr. Crispin goes through the first day motions, and as the bell is buzzing, he says,
I hope none of you struggle with commitment issues. Where you sat today will be your assigned seat for the semester.
As the rest of the class is pushing for the door, Elle fights the tide to get to me.
I am so sorry, she says.
It's our only class together, I say, and we don't even get to sit next to each other. Callie slips through the crowd and interrupts us.
Oh, Belle, you're heading to Seahall, right?
She turns to me.
Hi, Willow.
I fake smile as wide as my face will stretch. Ellen squeezes my hand.
I'll catch up with you later, okay?
She's three steps in the opposite direction before she turns and adds,
And hey, I'll talk to Crispin about the seating chart.
I see no evidence of Beau all day long, except for his little brother, when I pass the freshman hall. Even though I'll see Beau at work tonight, I feel sweet relief as I head for the parking lot in search of Tim's Jeep.
Will!
I glance up. Mitch's head bobs far above the crowd.
Walk with me!
I find myself smiling as he catches up to me. He falls in step with me and says,
So, what do you, like, do?
I almost laugh, but then I feel Mrs. Salisbury like a little bird on my shoulder. Besides school?
Yeah.
Well, I work. My shoulders hunch up in a question. I watch TV.
Where do you work?
Harpies. Why? He steps in front of me and holds the door leading outside open for me.
Well, I want to know where I should take you on our date, and I figure I should find out a little more about you before I decide on a destination.
Our date? I wait as he holds the door for a stampede of freshman girls. Manners. Sweet Jesus, he has manners.
Yeah. The date I'm about to ask you on. So you'll do me the honor of allowing me to take you on a date?
Why?
Why did I ask you out?
I nod.
Well, you're cute. And you remember me from sixth grade.
Okay. I'm not thrilled by the sound of cute, but it's better than some other names I've been called before. Have you ever asked a girl out before?
A few.
Have any ever said yes? I stop and turn to him, my hands thrown up in the air. Wait, no. You know what? That image of Beau in the storeroom flashes through my memory. I hear him say my name, and the thought feels like nothing more than a dead end.
Yes. Yes. I will go on a date with you.
He holds his hand out for a shake, and I take it. I expect his palm to be sweaty, but it's not. Like Goldilocks and her third bed. It's just right. Mitch taps my phone number into his phone and promises to text me so that I can save his. He veers off toward the locker rooms outside of the stadium. I think this might be a bad idea, but I think a lot of things. And I need to forget Beau. This seems like a good start.
Will!
Snaps Ellen. She speedwalks through rows of junior parking, her hips swishing back and forth like those people who do Olympic speedwalking.
What was that?
I shrug.
You fucker! You gave him your number!
Tim comes up behind her, his phone dangling from one hand.
Wait, he says. Was that Mitch Lewis?
Ellen answers before I can think of the words.
Oh, it so was, and this little hooker gave him her number!
That guy's a beast. I heard scouts have been all over him.
That's the story with every decent football player in Clover City. Every once in a while, it turns into more than a story. The only thing that comes close to football is the pageant. The both of them make up the lifeblood of this place. I don't even mean it in a bad way. The pageant and football pull this little town out of itself and turn it into something more. Because when those stadium lights are on, when that curtain parts, we are the best versions of ourselves.
Doesn't matter how good he is, says Ellen. He's friends with Patrick Thomas.
Oh, Christ. Not that asshole. I can still see him glaring back at me after school that day when I diverted Millie. Tim nods.
It's true. They've been friends since we were kids.
We walk toward my car, with Tim trailing behind, buried deep in his phone again.
So, maybe the seating arrangement in Crispin's class won't be so miserable after all, says Elle.
If she knew about all that had happened with me and Beau, she would be my conscience and tell me that it's too soon, that I need to get over Beau first. I reach around to the front pocket of my backpack and fish out my keys. Yeah,
I guess. But I'd still rather sit with you, I tell Elle.
You guys aren't sitting with each other for second period?
No, I say. Thanks to this one, I point to Elle. We were too late. I'm sorry, she says again. Have I said I'm sorry? Well, at least you have Callie, I tell her. Oh, come on, don't be like that.
But really, babe, says Tim, you know she's the most annoying person ever.
Y'all need to back off my shit. She's my friend, okay?
But we're your only friends, says Tim, a smile curling at his lips. You don't get to have any other friends.
He kisses her cheek. Yeah, I pipe in. Just us. And I almost mean it. Elle knocks her shoulder against mine. I missed you today.
Me too.
Even though she's standing right here next to me, she feels far, further than I can see. Chapter 18. That night at work, my phone rings. I leave Marcus at the front and answer it as I'm walking to the break room. Hello?
Hi. Hey, it's Mitch.
The line is dead for a second.
I was calling about that date.
He doesn't sound nearly as confident on the phone. It's kind of endearing, and also sort of like false advertising. But I guess it was pretty sweet of him to do more than text. Oh, right, of course.
How about this Saturday?
He asks.
Our first game is on Friday.
Yeah, that'll work.
Sure.
I can hear him smiling.
Cool.
Okay, so Saturday. But I'll see you at school before then, I remind him.
Right. Yes, I'll see you before then. Because of school. And because that would be weird if I avoided you until then.
I laugh. Right. Yes. Weird. After I hang up, I walk back out through the kitchen where Beau is leaning up against the cooker with his arms crossed. He chews on his bottom lip, his gaze following me until I turn the corner. I feel good. It makes me feel good. To be wanted, but not had. At the end of the night, I walk out with Beau and Marcus since Ron is still doing payroll. Marcus is in his girlfriend's car and gone in a matter of seconds. Beau says nothing, but waits to pull out as I turn my car on and reverse out of my parking spot. My car goes over the hump at the exit, and my lights flash over the windows of the Chili Bowl across the street. Framed by the window is a huge now hiring sign. Chili may be a southern specialty, but the official Willowdean opinion is, looks like dog food, smells like dog food, must be dog food. There is a very long list of things I would do before working there. Beau passes me. I hold my eyes steady, straight ahead. Here I am, waiting to talk to the manager at the Chili Bowl. The whole place has been built to look like a Lincoln Logs cabin. The walls are covered in mismatched frames holding pictures of Clover City locals from the last 60 years doing all kinds of things like tailgating, drinking beer on the porch, or sprawling out on the grass for the 4th of July parade. I slide into a booth to wait for a manager with harpies sitting across the street, taunting me. This is Beau's fault. Everything was fine until 5th period. My day was great. Work had been okay the night before, and maybe I was a little too pleased with myself. An okay first day of school, a first date on the books, and an amicable-ish working relationship with Beau. But then 15 minutes into world history, and in came Beau with a yellow folded piece of paper, a transfer slip. Class, said Miss Rubio. Welcome Beau Larson. He'll be joining us for the remainder of the year. Millie's best friend Amanda, who I sit next to, lets out a low whistle. He sat one row over and two desks ahead of me. As he settled into his seat, he looked over his shoulder and winked right at me.
Isn't that the guy you work with?
She whispered.
Yeah.
The sinking pit of dread in my stomach left me nauseous.
How do you get any work done? His butt looks like a peach.
What?
Like the bottom of a peach, she said. Peach butt.
After school, I was on a mission. I didn't even stop to wait for Elle and Tim. I got in my car, slammed the gear shift into drive, and sped out of the parking lot as fast as I could. Miraculously, I did not take down any pedestrians on the way. So that's what brought me here to the Chili Bowl.
You here for the job?
A guy no older than 25 with floppy black hair plops down in front of me.
I'm Alejandro.
I nod. Yeah?
Pay your shit.
I need a job.
Okay.
He leans in closer, like someone might hear, even though the place is empty. I think he's the anxious type of guy that might work in such a quiet place on purpose.
So here's the deal. Have you been arrested?
No.
You've worked with food before?
Kind of. I ran the register at Harpy's.
Close enough. And lastly, were you fired from your last job?
Nope. He twiddles his thumbs and takes a few measured breaths.
When can you start?
And that's my interview. I lean back in the booth. Outside of Harpy's, Ron sits on the curb taking a smoke break. I feel like a jerk leaving them like this without any notice, but I can't face Beau 4 nights a week. Now, I say. Ron's door is open. He's sitting there behind his desk in khaki shorts and a CCHS Athletics Booster Club polo.
Will, I...
Can we talk? I push the door open a little further. The hinges creak.
What's going on, kid?
I suck in a breath and exhale. I need to quit. He presses his lips together as his thick brows furrow. I see the questions on his face, but all he says is,
Did something happen?
I shake my head. I'll return my uniform after I wash it. He nods.
It's no rush.
And just like with Beau, I find myself wishing that he'd put up more of a fight. Neither of us says anything. But thank you, I add, breaking the silence, for the opportunity.
Well, I'll miss seeing your face around here, he says.
I drive the whole way home in silence with the windows rolled down, my thoughts swallowed up by the wind. Chapter 19. After school on Friday, I head over to Elle's. We sit at the dining room table, sharing a bag of chips while her mom unpacks scrapbooking supplies. Scrawled out on the table in front of us are snapshots of Mrs. Driver dressed as all different incarnations of Dolly Parton. After wiping my fingers on my jeans, I study one picture of her in a suede coat with fringe hanging from the sleeves and a long-fitted denim skirt. Her hair is smooth and round like Dolly in the early years. I like this one, I tell her. She rests her hand on my shoulder. Oh, me too. I think that's my favorite hair. A drag queen out in Odessa styled that wig for me. Took him a week to get it just right. Elle picks up a photo of her mom in a floor-length red sequin gown. Nice perm, Mom. So chic. Ellen Sadie Rose. You wouldn't know chic if it bit you on the asset. She tickles the back of Elle's neck with her long nails. Where Ellen is long and lean, her mom is compact and curvy. But you see their connection in the way they twirl their hair or chew on their bottom lips or how they whistle through their straws before each sip. Here, says Mrs. D. You take this one to keep. She hands me a picture of her and Lucy from years ago. They stand in front of a neon sign that reads The Hideaway. Behind them is a large, smoke-filled crowd. Looks like some kind of bar or club, but whatever it is, it's somewhere Lucy never would have gone on her own. Mrs. Driver wears fitted overalls with a tight red shirt underneath, while Lucy's in one of her signature sack dresses, but with a touch of blue eyeshadow. I'd never seen her wear makeup before. Mrs. D brought out the bravest parts of Lucy. I know Lucy was important to Mrs. D, but for Lucy, Mrs. D was a lifeline. I slide the picture into the front pocket of my backpack. I love the photo so much, but it hurts too. Mrs. Driver is the perfect Dolly. And it was impossible for Lucy with her thick, pale legs and flat hair not to look sad in comparison. Her smear of blue eyeshadow is an unheard call to the person she always wanted to be. No matter how high she held her chin, I can't unsee what she isn't. I feel like a traitor.
Mom, says Elle, how come you never entered the pageant?
It's something I've always wondered, too. Mrs. D's whole life is basically a pageant on steroids. She would have killed the competition. She shrugs.
I thought about it. I think every girl in this town does. But I wasn't the same person I am today. I didn't have it in me back then to pretend I felt good enough about myself to enter a beauty pageant.
Her words sink in. I wonder if that's why the pageant has bothered me more this year than in the past. The girls who enter have got to be proud enough of themselves to say they deserve to compete. That kind of unflinching confidence makes me uneasy in a way it never has before. Ellen shoves a handful of chips into her face.
Let's go upstairs.
I take the bowl of chips and follow her to her room. On her bed, we lie in opposite directions, with her head at the foot of the bed and mine on her pile of pillows.
So you quit harpies? Out of nowhere?
She asks with her mouth full. The chili bowl was hiring.
The chili bowl is always hiring, she retorts.
I reach for some chips.
I don't know. I was tired of the uniform.
I guess that's a good enough reason for Elle, because she's quick to change the topic to something much juicier.
So, when's your date?
Tomorrow.
You nervous?
I guess, but not really.
Mitch, I never would have guessed, she says. You really like him?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I needed something new. I pull one of her pillows over my head, muffling my words. I wouldn't have said yes if I didn't like him.
New? You've never even been kissed.
She ties my shoelaces together in a sloppy knot.
He doesn't seem like your type.
My insides are swimming in guilt. I can't tell her about Bo now. It's too late. And there's nothing left to tell.
I don't have a type. Not yet, you don't.
Later, when I pull up to my house, the first thing I notice is the glowing square that is Lucy's room. I should sit here for a moment and prepare myself for whatever it is my mom is doing to that room, but I don't. Instead, I tear my keys from the ignition and storm up the walkway to the back door. Riot is rubbing the length of his body against the sliding glass door. The first thing I hear is Olivia Newton-John blaring from the second floor. I drop my purse on the counter, and Riot runs up the stairs a few steps ahead of me. I don't know what I expect to find, but it's not the sight of my mother seated behind a card table with all of Aunt Lucy's furniture pushed up against the walls.
What are you doing? I spit at her.
The framed Dolly Parton records that had lined these walls for my entire life are stacked at the end of the dresser, and sitting on top of Aunt Lucy's pastel pink record player is my mom's iPod. This is the worst-case scenario.
Well, says Mom, squinting over her sewing machine as she runs a seam. I've always needed a craft room. We've talked about this, and my bedroom isn't cutting it anymore. Your bedroom? You have the whole house.
She pushes her reading glasses up the bridge of her nose.
I know you're upset, Dumplin. I do. But we can't let this room sit here like a tomb. We've got to move forward. Luce would understand.
I don't understand.
But you moved everything. Can't you work in here without changing everything? You even took down her records. Why would you do that?
Oh, baby, those records are so old. We're going to have to take down this wallpaper because of the squares those things left on the walls. I pick up as many records as I can carry and take them across the hallway to my room. If I had any free hands, I'd be slamming doors, too. After leaving the records on my bed, I go back for more.
Dumplin'!
I whirl around, the musty records pressed against my chest.
It's like you're trying to get rid of her. You know that's not true, she mumbles, holding a needle between her teeth. What are you even working on?
Backdrops? This year's theme is Texas. Ain't she grand? She marks the red satin with a pencil.
And aren't you supposed to be at work?
I quit.
You quit?
Her voice is higher than normal. She straightens a long piece of satin through her sewing machine with her foot hovering over the pedal. All my life, the pageant has invaded every facet of my world, except for this room. Because in the world I lived in with Lucy, no one cared about crowns or sashes. It feels disrespectful for you to be up here making your dumb costumes. I mean, what could be so hard about a Lady Liberty costume? Just throw some fabric over your shoulder. My voice is breaking. I hold my eyes open wide, scared that if I blink, a whole river of tears will come splashing down my cheeks. The sewing machine thumps a methodic beat, never ceasing, but only getting stronger and stronger with each stitch. The ever-constant needle taps against my head, waiting for me to crack.
"Dumplin',"
she calls over the sewing machine, not even acknowledging what I just said.
"Why don't you take yourself downstairs for a tall glass of ice water?"
Desperation swells in my chest, and I think I might do anything to get her out of this room. I march over to the dresser and yank the top drawer free. Without hesitation, I feel the detached drawer with everything I can reach, mostly records.
"Willow Dean Dixon, you better hope that you did not ruin the track on that drawer." "It's like her being dead isn't good enough," I yell. "You won't be happy until every bit of her is gone and you fill this room with all the things she wasn't."
Finally, the sewing machine stops. Mom stands, but says nothing. I take the drawer and slam my bedroom door behind me. Dust swirls through the air and tickles my nostril. I sneeze loudly into the albums.
"Bless you,"
my mother says from the hallway. She's so quiet, I almost don't hear her. Chapter 20. Getting ready for my date with Mitch is like a freaking makeover montage in my bedroom. Elle makes me try on everything from my 8th grade graduation dress to this formless chiffon floral tunic my mom bought me last Christmas. "It makes you look so mature," my mom had said. I didn't take it as a compliment. We settle on jeans and a black and white striped shirt with my dark blonde hair spread out across my shoulders. I told Mitch to pick me up at 5 because my mom had a pageant board meeting until 6, and I didn't really feel like getting the how to be a lady, what boys want in a girl talk from her. And, of course, there's the fact that I'm pissed at her. After locking the door behind me, I sit on the curb next to our mailbox. I can both hear and smell it from around the corner. He drives an old maroon Suburban that probably hasn't passed inspection for the last 5 years. He parks in front of me and hops out the minute the engine winds to a stop.
"Was I late?"
He pulls me up by one hand. And I mean, really pulls me up. No, not at all.
"I figured because you were sitting out here, and I guess guys normally go to the front door to pick up their dates."
"Oh," I say, hiking my thumb back to our front porch.
"We don't use the front door. It's been broken for years."
His head cocks to the side.
"Well, you look real nice."
"You too." He really does. He's wearing a too-long, even for him, button-down shirt and starched jeans, like with a crease and everything. And boots. Not those pointy-toed cowboy boots you see in movies, but round-toed work boots. Graham used to say that you should never trust a man in clean boots. The front seat of Mitch's car is clean-ish, with dust and lint deeply embedded in every crevice. But the back half is drowning in a sea of clothes. Lots of camo and boots and fast food cups. He takes me to a Chinese restaurant called Mr. Chang's Chinese Palace, a local favorite in an old shopping center with fast cash loan offices, insurance storefronts, and one of those tax places that make their employees dress like the Statue of Liberty. The hostess seats us at an iridescent booth that looks like one of those giant clamshells from The Little Mermaid that Ariel and her sisters hang out in. To my surprise, Mitch slides in next to me rather than across from me, and I can't stop the O that slips from my lips. The waitress comes for our drink order, and Mitch asks,
"Hey, you know those little crispy things? Could we get some of those in that orange sauce?"
Okay, says the waitress, a girl who I recognize as a senior from when I was a freshman. Once she leaves, Mitch turns to me.
I used to hate coming to Chinese restaurants when I was a kid because they never bring bread out or put crackers on the table. So my mom always asked for those crispy things.
Wonton strips. I have to stop myself smiling. That's what they're called.
Yeah. Well, they're delicious.
We look over the menu in silence. As the waitress approaches with our drinks, Mitch leans in and whispers in my ear,
"You can order whatever you want."
I'm tempted to point out to him that everything on the menu is about the exact same price, but instead I thank him. Once the waitress takes our orders, Mitch holds a wonton out for me.
"You want one?"
I shake my head. "I saw that you guys won last night." He nods.
"Just barely, but yeah, a win is a win."
We sit in silence for a moment as the local radio station plays over the speakers and our feet brush up against each other. Mitch coughs into his fist.
"So, guess Ellen Driver is your best friend, right?"
I reach for my glass of water and do that thing where your mouth can't quite find the straw.
"Yeah, she is."
I tell him some about Lucy and Mrs. Driver and how Dolly Parton brought us all together.
"You're like a diehard Dolly Parton fan? I mean, isn't she really old?"
"I don't know if there's a how to go on a first date without making a total fool of yourself handbook out there, but if there is, I'm pretty sure fessing up to your weird Dolly Parton obsession is not on the to-do list. But I feel this intense sense of loyalty to her that I can't shake. Okay, so here's the deal. Yes, I am a huge Dolly Parton fan, but there's something you have to understand about Dolly Parton fans. We're nuts. And since there's such a high level of crazy amongst all of us, I am, in comparison, not as batshit as most others. Like, there are people out there who have devoted their lives to creating ceramic Dolly Parton dolls. Some people even leave their jobs and families behind just to be near her."
"Okay,"
he says. His brow crinkles together, and I can see that he's really making an effort to understand.
"Okay, but on, like, a scale of 1 to 10?
On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being total nut job, I guess Ellen and I would be 4s. Maybe 5s? Mrs. Driver is a total 8, but not quite a 9 because she hasn't had plastic surgery. Yet. And I guess Lucy was about a 7.
"Was?"
he asks. The memory of her sinks through me and settles deep in my bones. "Was. She died in December of last year." He sits back.
"Oh. Wow. Hey, I'm really sorry."
"Thanks. It's fine." I reach for a wonton. "What about you? Who's your best friend?" "Please don't say Patrick Thomas. Please don't say Patrick Thomas." He pops all the fingers on his right hand, and then his left.
"I'm close with all the guys on the team. It's hard not to be. But I guess I'd have to say Patrick Thomas."
I bite down on my lip and give myself 5 seconds to come up with something to say. 1, 2, 3.
"You cringed,"
he says. "What? No, I didn't." He laughs.
"Yeah, he did. It's fine, really."
My shoulders slump. "Okay." I shift around in the seat to get a better look at him. "It's just that he's such a
dick."
"Yes, exactly. And you're not."
"I've known him forever. Sometimes I still think of him as that kid from when we were really little. And then I remember that he always was a dick."
I get what he's saying. When you've known someone for so long, you don't see the same things in them that everyone else does. But then when you're friends, because of who you were, not who you are, it's hard not to find the common thread that stitches you together. Still, I guess it's not my job to police his social life. "Okay, I can buy that." He shrugs and then drums his fingers on the table.
So, what's your favorite holiday?"
4th of July, I guess." He wipes the sweat from his forehead using a napkin.
"I'm a Halloween kind of guy."
The waitress swoops in and places a bowl of egg drop soup down in front of each of us. I hate Halloween. I always have. Elle loves Halloween and drags me to a different party every year. But as a kid, I never fit into the costumes and was always left with whatever we could scour from my mom's and Lucy's closets. I guess the magic of being someone else is lost when you can never quite shed your own skin. I drew the line in fifth grade when my mom sent me to school as the modern-day Queen of England in her old yellow suit with my hair curled up high and sprayed white. All the other girls in my class went as princesses or pop stars or witches. I mean, fat kids have enough problems finding clothes. The added pressure of Halloween is unnecessary.
You're missing out on Halloween. Big time.
I want to tell Mitch why I hate Halloween, because I feel like maybe, being pretty big himself, he'll understand. But I'm not sure how to form the words, or even if I'm ready to peel back that layer of myself to let him see. Just because he's a big guy doesn't mean I can tell him all of my fat girl secrets. We slurp our soup in silence until the busboy brings our dinners. After we've finished eating, Mitch pays for our meal using all $5 bills. At my house, Mitch gets out of the car to open the passenger door for me. Thanks for dinner, I say.
My pleasure to feed you.
He holds out his hand for me, and I stare at it for a moment before he solidly shakes my hand.
Good night.
And that is my very first date. Dolly Parton, my dead aunt, our favorite holidays, best friends, and a handshake. Now I have to sit next to him in class for the rest of the year. I can't even bring myself to call Ellen for the blow-by-blow. Making out with Beau next to a dumpster felt more romantic than that date. I like to think I'm not high maintenance or anything, but is it so bad to want some chemistry? A little bit of spark that makes me feel like we're the only people in the world for 10 minutes? Inside, Mom is sitting at the kitchen table on the phone, taking notes in a bedazzled notebook. It's that we can't really choreograph the dance routine before registration. She pauses. Yes, I trust your abilities, but this year is all new blood, Judith, and I... Hold on a moment. She cups her hand over the receiver and turns to me. Who was that who dropped you off? A friend. On the other line, Judith is still yammering on about the pageant choreography, which has really never looked like anything more than measured walking. I'm going to bed. Upstairs, I sift through the stacks of Lucy's records before placing one on the player. I watch as the needle follows the grooves of Dolly's voice. Chapter 21. Last night was my first night at the Chili Bowl. No one, I mean no one, comes into the Chili Bowl. If my first shift was any indication, it is mathematically impossible for the electricity to still be on. At the end of the night, when Alejandro locked the door behind us, he sighed through his nose and said,
"Just not chili season yet."
I can't imagine the time of year makes all that much difference when South Texas is only known to have two seasons, hot as balls and not quite as hot as balls. Because I had nothing to do last night except relive the most awkward date ever, I compiled a list of pros and cons regarding my most recent life choice. Pros and cons of working at the Chili Bowl. Pros. I can wear jeans, no more polyester dresses that zip up the front. I don't like chili, so I won't be stuffing my face anytime soon. No Beau. No drunk teenagers who want chili 5 minutes before we close. Minimal cleaning, because of the whole no one comes here thing. It's quiet. Cons. I smell like chili. Fewer hours equals less money. No Beau. It's too quiet. Beau is everywhere. His lips, red as ever. In fifth period, I feel his eyes on me like a shadow. Sometimes I find myself roaming the halls, not quite realizing what I'm doing until I catch a glimpse of him. But not only that, my whole mind has turned against me. Every time I blink, all I see are my flaws. My body in a funhouse mirror. Hips too wide, thighs too big, and a head too small for the rest of me. Before this summer, I'd always been happy in this skin. proud even. But then came Beau. Since that first time we made out in the cab of his truck, I felt myself cracking. Something about the way his skin felt against mine drew all these doubts to the surface that I didn't even